हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावरेधमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीअद्वैत गदाधर शिव श्री गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
So now Yayati is continuing with the definition of the kinds of munis. So then, again here he's saying, he's already given that those who they either dwell in the woods next to the village or in the village next to the woods, and one who doesn't either lives very simply or without any endeavor may have so many things, and therefore he has, you know, opulence. Again, a wise man withdrawn from all worldly objects might live in a hamlet leading the life of a hermit. He may never exhibit the pride of family, birth, or learning. Clad in the scantiest robes, he may yet regard himself as attired in the richest vestments. He may rest contented with food just enough for the support of life. Such a person, though dwelling in an inhabited place, liveth yet in the woods. So here, the pride of family, birth, or learning. So these things always must be left. Right, so during life one may be overwhelmed by them, that may make one inspired to work, because it's better that you work than do nothing, right? So if that means you're inspired to work because of some, you know, mundane need, then okay, that happens. But it's not great, but it's better than doing nothing, right? The better is to be active, but not based on pride or what one's going to gain from it. Right? That's what is correct, what one's supposed to do. And that gives the most satisfaction to everyone all the way around. Right? Because such quality of work is not motivated. Right? It means personal motivation, some particular desire. So then that the quality of that then is more inspiring or satisfying to others. Does that make sense? Right. So even though one thinks it will reduce, it actually increases. The person again who, with passions under complete control, adopteth the vow of silence, refraining from action and entertaining no desire, achieveth success. Right, so controlling the senses, adopteth the vow of silence. That means only talk about Krishna. Right? Refraining from action means doing any action for oneself. Right? And entertaining no desire means you're not doing it for yourself and the result you're not trying for. Achieve his success. Why shouldest thou not indeed reverence the man who liveth on clean food, who refraineth from ever injuring others, whose heart is ever pure, who stands in the splendor of ascetic attributes, who is free from the leaden weight of desire. Right? Leaden weight means it's very heavy. When you have desire, then that means so many things you need, and you're weighted down by those, because then all your endeavors are following that. Does that make sense? So many things are there. And then, so that makes it very difficult. Right? So when one's free from desire, means free from desire for things specifically for yourself, for no Krishna conscious reason. Does that make sense? But desire for service to Krishna, things in a relationship to Krishna, then that doesn't create that weight. Does that make sense? Who abstaineth from injury even when sanctioned by religion, means religion may sanction injury to other creatures, but you don't take that. Right? You know, it's like you could perform an Ashwamedha yajna, right? But you don't. Right? Because it injures other creatures. You'll do something else, like chant Hare Krishna. Right? Like that. Does that make sense? Take Prashad. Taking Prashad, Rupa Goswami, gives an analogy, though it's not correct, because you can never compare, but just to give you an idea, taking Prashad is like performing 10,000 Ashwamedha yajnas. Right? Not bad. Emancipated by austerities and reduced in flesh, marrow, and blood, such a one conquereth not only this, but the highest world. And when the Muni sits in yoga meditation, becoming indifferent to happiness and misery, honor and insult, he leaveth the world and enjoyeth communion with Brahman. When the Muni taketh food without providing for it beforehand and without any relish, like a sleeping infant feeding on the mother's lap, then like the all-pervading spirit he becomes identified with the whole universe and attaineth to salvation. Right? So here we have an overlap. We notice that there are comments here that, or let's say, it is talking about attaining to Brahman. So that principle is there whether it's for devotees or non-devotees, right? So for the non-devotees, then they do stuff like vow of silence means they don't talk at all. No work means they don't do any work. They just do their sadhana and that's it. Right? Refraining from action, no activity, no desire for anything, just indifferent. Right? And so this will get them to the stage of Brahman. Right? So we see is that therefore then he's indifferent to happiness and misery, honor and insult. And when he eats things that are nice, he doesn't care. He eats things that are not nice, he doesn't care. Does that make sense? So that will get you to the stage of Brahman. But for the devotee is going beyond Brahman. So for the devotee, then they are not interested in anything material, but that doesn't mean that they don't do any activity. Right? Does that make sense? So they're engaged in activity, but not for themselves. So they get the same result as the impersonalist, that they're freed from material contamination, but they also get situated at the lotus feet of the Lord. Right? So it's so much better. And it's nicer. Right? Here, they're eating something nice, they have to be indifferent. Right? But the devotee can eat something nice, appreciate that it's nice because it's Krishna. Right? So even though the devotee, in the same way, is not endeavoring to enjoy himself, but what comes, then it's appreciated. But it's seen in relationship to Krishna. So not only do they get the liberation and go back to Godhead, they do it in a much more pleasant fashion. Right? So that's, yeah, this is what's behind. But otherwise, it's the same principle of becoming indifferent to the material world. Right? So, prashad is not material, it's spiritual. So that's why it can be appreciated. Right? Or the deities, they look very nice. So the garlands smell that have been offered to the deities smell very nice. Right? Does that make sense? So that can be appreciated because it's spiritual. It's not. One is indifferent to the material. One's not indifferent to spiritual. Section 92. Astaka asked, "Who amongst these, O king, both exerting constantly like the sun and moon, first attaineth to communion with Brahma, the ascetic or the man of knowledge?" Right? So he's given this thing of the knowledge, but he's also given, you know, performing the great austerities. It's generally discussed in combination, but now he's seen that there's two aspects. Yayati answered, "The wise, with the help of the Vedas and of knowledge, have ascertained the visible universe to be illusory, instantly realizes the Supreme Spirit as the sole existent, independent essence. While they that devote themselves to yoga meditate, may yoga meditation take time to acquire the same knowledge, for it is by practice alone that these latter divest themselves of the consciousness of quality." Right, so he's asked, which is better, the person of knowledge or the yogi who does all kinds of austerities and like this kind of thing? So he's pointed out the one with knowledge, because he understands that the world is illusion. Actually, all it is a manifestation of the Lord's energy. That we think it's something special, that's illusion. What it actually is the interaction of the Lord's energies. Someone in knowledge understands that and attains to the transcendental platform immediately. Does that make sense? While the yogi, or the ascetic, is by practicing austerities only that he will gradually come to that platform. Does that make sense? Right. So we can see here that these are two separate ones, but the practice you get by knowledge you get. But you have to have that knowledge, so they both work together. So the process of buddhi yoga means it's combined. The performance of activity with knowledge, right? That's even better yet. Does that make sense? That will be brought out in the Bhagavad Gita later, in the Mahabharata. Yes? No? Hence, the wise attain to salvation first, right? Those in knowledge, they attain. They get out of the material world first. Then again, if the person devoted to yoga find not sufficient time in one's life to attain success, being led astray by the attractions of the world, in his next life he is benefited by the progress already achieved, for he devoteth himself regretfully to the pursuit of success. But the man of knowledge ever beholdeth the indestructible unity, and is, therefore, though steeped in worldly enjoyments, never affected by them at heart. Therefore, there is nothing to impede his salvation. Right. So he's saying is that the yogi, you're doing all kinds of austerities, but then one may get distracted by the pursuit of personal of pleasure. Right? Does that make sense? Because one is dealing with the senses, so one is going in something that's not nice for the senses. But since he's dealing in the field of the senses, then something nice comes up, he may get distracted. Right? Well, someone in knowledge, then whether they're in a situation where there's nothing for the senses or surrounded by all kinds of material facility, they're not distracted. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes?
You mentioned that the yogi can come in your next life. Is it only if he's a devotee? If he's not a devotee, then his yoga just disappears.
Well, it's not that his yoga disappears if he's not a devotee. It means that the particular result he was doing, let's say he was doing something to attain to the heavenly planets, that will be lost. But his determination to perform yoga and austerities, that's his desire, that's his need. So next life that'll continue, but now it'll be more focused. Right? So then he'll get farther. But so lifetime after lifetime they get someone. But the man of knowledge, then he can be in all those facilities. Just like we take, for example, then the brahmachari, he is studying. So he's not in knowledge. Right? He's studying knowledge. It means he could be, but generally he's studying. So therefore, he's in an austere environment because he neither has the knowledge to keep himself away and he's not that practice of austerities. Right? So in the tradition, then they wouldn't go to their home, because then being surrounded by the material facilities, they might get distracted. Right? Does that make sense? So until they become mature, then when they're mature, then going out of that environment into the worldly environment, they don't get distracted. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why the life is set up like that, because they don't have either yet. Right? Because here when we say an ascetic, that means someone who's, that is their lifestyle. That's their, you know, it means, you could say a brahmacharya is austere or knowledgeable or expert or like that, but they're known as a brahmachari. But if you say someone's an ascetic, or someone's a jnani, or someone's a, you know, a leader, or someone's a, you know, a business person, you mean someone who's graduated from that, right? Because a man of the society has already done his term training as a brahmachari. Then he applies that into his area. Does that make sense? Like that. So even though in one sense it does apply, in another sense it doesn't. So that's why then the brahmachari is very careful that in that home environment he doesn't get distracted. Because otherwise it's very easy to get distracted. Right? Because if you have an environment that's more austere and you have one that's less austere, naturally the tendency is to take, without knowledge, to take the one that's less austere. But the only way you can actually enter into the environment of less austerity is with more knowledge. Right? In other words, the yogi has less knowledge, so therefore he's more austere. And the person with more knowledge doesn't have to be so austere, because he doesn't see it as sense gratification. He sees it actually for what it is, as part of the Lord's energies and their interaction. Does that make sense? Something to engage in the Lord's service. Well, the person who's being austere, he's austere because he sees the difference between the two. This is sense gratification. That will take you away from upliftment. This is not sense gratification, that will make you elevated. Does that make sense? So he's that much knowledge there to see that. But the other one, it doesn't matter if there's sense gratification or not, because he sees beyond that. Does that make sense? So that's what the brahmachari is trying to learn. Right? And then depending on how much he learns, then he situates himself appropriately. Right? Does that make sense? Right? Yes.
That means austerity is done only for controlling senses?
Austerity is done to control the senses. Yes, it controls the senses, but you have to control the senses to do austerity. So they nourish each other. But what you're trying to do is free yourself from material attachment. Right? Because that's what keeps one here. Is material attachment. Material desire, material attachment. Because as we saw before, is that sambandha and Abhideya, they meet it at, I mean, Sambandha and Prayojana meet at Abhideya. So there's only when there's desire and need, then there's activity, right? So if the desire is material, the need will naturally be material, so the action will be material. So therefore, if you give up material desire, you give up material need, you give up material endeavor, right? That's why it says do nothing, say nothing, do nothing, right? But for the devotee, they transfer that desire is Krishna conscious, the need is Krishna conscious, so the endeavor is Krishna conscious. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, it can continue. Or in between the two, the bridge between the two, is knowledge. So in knowledge, you understand what the desire is, what the goal is, and therefore your endeavor is done with knowledge. So you're detached from it. Even though you're engaged in that activity. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what's being trying to gain. Right? So it's not like we said before, the sages are, just take pleasure in seeing the brahmachari suffer by being austere and away from the home, or they have a thing against, you know, women and mothers, so then they want them to not be around their children. No, it's that they know what will make the success. Someone who is austere has knowledge, they will be successful in whatever endeavor, in family life, in their various occupations and that, because without that you can't perform anything. So it's understood is that I'm a brahmachari, therefore then I will be successful in life. Right? So the idea is not to be absorbed in family life as a brahmachari, right? But it's to be, one may be situated there, right? As a day student, one's there. One interacts with the family, that's there. But that's not your purpose. Does that make sense? So that doesn't mean you're not nice to your family. Does that make sense? It means that your purpose at this time of life is not to enjoy family life. Right? And the facilities. It's to... the main focus is on one's training. Does that make some sense? Right? Then you can be situated anywhere. Then you can be in the ashram, you can be a day student, it doesn't matter. Does that make sense? Because with that understanding, that's not your purpose. Right? Because it's what your purpose is what your endeavor is actually going to give the result. Does that make sense? Like, two people are cooking, but they have the same ingredients, the same process, they want something cooked, but their goal, one wants to cook for themselves, one's cooking for the deity. So the result will be different. One will be mundane, one will be spiritual. But it looks the same. Does that make sense? So that's why it's there. So the intelligent person understands this process and then is involved in it properly. Yeah? Is that okay?
Strict rules.
Yeah.
Unless you perform it for Vishnu, you get
it done. Yeah. It means there's the rule is there that you do something and it's done for Krishna, then you're elevated. It's not, you will become entangled.
Brahmacharya is Krishna's wanted
brahmacharya. Yeah, yeah. Even Krishna. Yeah, Krishna is himself a brahmacharya. You see, he always does. He goes to school, he does all these things. Because it's something that's nice, right? It's something that's there and it performs, it gives one the strength to do anything. Right? Because unless there's focus, unless there's that determination, then it won't happen. Right? Right? Little kids, that's what you see. They don't have focus, don't have determination. They just play this and that. But the bigger, then they have that. So they know what they want and they endeavor for it. Yeah? He, however, faileth to attain to knowledge, should yet devote himself to piety as dependent on action, sacrifices, right? Right, so he who doesn't have that knowledge then should devote himself to proper activities and everything like that, performance of his proper duties. Because that will give you knowledge and detachment. Right? But one who's situated in knowledge, then it makes it very easy. Like that. But he that devoteth himself to such piety, moveth thereto by desire of salvation, can never achieve success. Yeah, in other words, without knowledge. His sacrifices bear no fruit and partake of the nature of cruelty. Piety, which is dependent on action, that proceedeth not from the desire of fruit, is, in case of such men, yoga itself. Right? In other words, you're performing it not even to get what you want. Even he wants to be liberated, he's not doing it to become liberated. He's doing it because that's what should be done. Right? In other words, when there's that indifference to material result, that's when one is liberated. Right? So because one has knowledge, he understands that he's liberated. But if you take through activity, then it's not by desiring the result of it. Right? By desiring the result, you'll practice it, you'll become expert. But it's by not desiring the result that you become freed from material contamination. So the easiest is to desire the result for Krishna. Because desire is, it's hard to stop desire. So therefore desire is engaged as desire for doing it for Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. Astaka said, O king, thou lookest like a young man. Thou art handsome and decked with a celestial garland. Thy splendor is great, Whence dost thou come, and where dost thou go? Whose messenger art thou? Art thou going down into the earth? Yayati said, Fallen from heaven upon the loss of all my religious merits, I am doomed to enter the earth hell. Indeed, I shall go there after I have finished my discourse with you. Even now the regents of the poise of the universe command me to hasten thither. And, O King, I have obtained it as a boon from Indra, that though fall I must upon the earth, yet I should fall amidst the wise and the virtuous. Ye are all wise and virtuous that are assembled here. Astaka said, Thou art acquainted with everything I ask thee, O King. Are there any regions for myself to enjoy in heaven or in the firmament? If there be, then thou shalt not fall, though falling. Yayati said, O King, there are as many regions for thee to enjoy in heaven, even as the number of kine and horses on earth, with the animals in the wilderness and on the hills. Right? In other words, Astaka has said that if there's anything for my piety that I've done, that are regions in the heavenly planets to enjoy that I would get as a result of that, then that would be given to Yayati so that he won't fall. And so he said, yes, you have so as many as there are horses and cows on the earth, that many regions there are. In other words, Astaka is very pious. Astaka said, if there are worlds for me to enjoy as fruits of my religious merits in heaven, O King, I give them all unto thee. Therefore, though falling, thou shalt not fall. O take thou soon all those, wherever they be, in heaven or in the firmament, let thy sorrow cease. Yayati answered, O best of kings, a Brahman-knowing Brahman alone can take in gift, but not one like ourselves. Right? Means he knows, means a knowledgeable Brahman, he can take these gifts, but as a Kshatriya, I can't accept charity. And, O monarch, I myself have given away to Brahmins as one should. Let no man who is not a Brahmin, and let not the wife of a learned Brahmin, ever live in infamy by accepting gifts. While on earth I ever desired to perform virtuous acts, having never done so before, how shall I now accept a gift? Pratardana, who is amongst them, asked, O thou of the handsomest form, I am Pratardana by name. I ask thee if there are any worlds for me to enjoy as fruits of my religious merits, in heaven or in the firmament. Answer me, thou art acquainted with everything. Yayati said, O King, numberless worlds full of felicity, effulgent like the solar disk, and where woe can never dwell, await thee. If thou dwellest in each, but for 7 days, they would not yet be exhausted. Pratardana said, These then I give unto thee. Therefore, though falling, thou must not fall. Let the worlds that are mine be thine, whether they be in the firmament or heaven. Oh, soon take them, let thy woes cease. Firmament means in the antariksha, right? In between, like Gandharva Loka and the Yakshas and Rakshasas, whatever. They're more powerful, so then they have, it's also like the heavenly planets, it's the middle heavenly planets. So it also includes the lower heavenly planets, you know, where the demons are and stuff like that. So some people go there, the antariksha. So he's saying, if I have anything in the antariksha or in heaven, let that all go to you. Yayati answered, O monarch, no king of equal energy should ever desire to receive as gift the religious merits of another king acquired by yoga austerities. And no king who is afflicted with calamity through the fate should, if wise, act in a sensuable way. Yes. Did Sarmishna and Devayani also fall down? It doesn't mention that they fell. It's just he fell himself. Because it's just like she said before, Shakuntala, she made the point that if the husband dies first and the wife follows close behind, and if the wife dies first then she waits there, so then most likely they're just waiting. Yeah? Because time here is very short compared to there. Right? So even if you go for a year, it's only one day there. You understand? So someone would go perform austerities and come back. So you might have to wait some days or weeks or months. But, you know? A king keeping his eye fixed forever on virtue should walk along the path of virtue like myself, and knowing what his duties are should not act so meanly as thou directest. When others desirous of acquiring religious merits do not accept gifts, how could I do what they themselves do not? On the conclusion of his speech, that best of kings, Iyati, was then addressed by Vasumat in the following words. Section 93. Vasumat said, I am Vasumat, the son of Oshadaswa. I would ask thee, O king, whether there are any worlds for me to enjoy as fruits of my religious merits, in heaven or in the firmament. Thou art, O high-souled one, acquainted with all holy regions. Yayati answered, there are as many regions for thee to enjoy in heaven as the number of places in the firmament, the earth, and the 10 points of the universe illuminated by the sun. Vasumat then said, I give them to thee, let those regions that are for me be thine. Therefore, though falling, thou shalt not fall. If to accept them as a gift is improper for thee, then, O monarch, buy them for a straw. Like that. I sell them to you for cheap. I give you a good price. I give you a good price. Yayati answered, I do not remember having ever bought or sold anything unfairly. This has never been done by other kings. How shall I therefore do it? Right? Because it wouldn't be fair taking that much and buying it for a straw. That wouldn't be. Vasumat said, if buying them, O king, be regarded by thee as improper, then take them as gift from me. For myself, I answer that I will never go to those regions that are for me. Let them therefore be thine. Right? In other words, a king can give another gift. It's not giving charity. It's a gift. You know, he's saying, take these. You know, so that's a gift. No, I want to give this to you. This is like that. So he's trying various ways. Sivi then addressed the king thus. I am, O king, Sivi by name, the son of Ushinara. O father, are there in firmament or in heaven any worlds for me to enjoy? Thou knowest every region that one may enjoy as the fruit of his religious merit. Yayati said, thou hast ever by speech or in mind disregarded the honest and the virtuous that applied to thee. Thou hast never. I said never or ever? Oh. Hare Krishna. There are infinite worlds for thee to enjoy in heaven, all blazing like lightning. Sivi then said, if thou regardest their purchase as improper, I give them to thee, take them all. O king, I shall never take them, namely, those regions where the wise never feel the least disquieted. Yayati answered, O Sivi, thou hast indeed obtained for thyself, possessed of the prowess of Indra, infinite worlds. But I do not desire to enjoy regions given to me by others. Therefore, I accept not thy gift. Okay. Astaka then said, O king, each of us had expressed his desire to give 3 worlds. No, no, it's okay. Astaka then said, O king, each of us has expressed his desire to give 3 worlds that each of us has acquired by religious merits. Thou acceptest them not, but leaving them for thee, we shall descend into the earth hell. So their point is this, in any case, we've given them, we're just leaving them here. So we'll go back to the earth. Like that. You know, we've given, we can't take them. Yes.
Why have you demanded to give it?
Why would they give it? Because it's natural for a living entity to be compassionate. Here is someone from the heavenly planets, obviously from the heavenly planets, and they don't want to see him, you know, that's where he belongs. So then they're thinking, you know, why he shouldn't be there. Like a king will see someone suffering and then they have wealth, they give it. You know, so they take care of this. So that's the natural thing. They protect. Kings protect. So here is somebody who is, you know, lacking their natural position, so then they want to somehow or another compensate that. Is that okay? So that's a natural position. They're not trying to exploit, they're willing to give. So what we see is even though the kings have so much, they can give it all away. That's what's special about them. Right? Yayati answered, "Ye are all truth-loving and wise. Give me that which I deserve. I shall not be able to do what I have never done before." Astaka then said, "Whose are those five golden chariots that we see? Do men that repair to these regions of everlasting bliss ride in them?" Right? In other words, they see five chariots. Yayati answered, "Those five gold cars displayed in glory and blazing as fire would indeed carry you to regions of bliss." Astaka said, "O king, ride on those cars thyself and repair to heaven. We can wait. We follow thee in time." Yayati said, "We can now all go together. Indeed, all of us have conquered heaven. Behold, the glorious path to heaven becomes visible." Vaishampayana continued, "Then all those excellent monarchs..." "Riding in those cars set out for heaven for gaining admittance into it, illuminating the whole firmament by the glory of their virtues." Then Astaka, breaking the silence, asked, "I had always thought that Indra was my special friend, and that I, of all others, should first obtain admittance into heaven. But how is it that Ushinara's son Sivi hath already left us behind?" Right? So here, even you're going to the heavenly planets, it doesn't mean that prestige and position still isn't there, right? It's something you're still going to buy. Everything's so nice and perfect, but it's still not, you're going to be bothered that someone else's chariot's a little bigger than yours, a little quicker than yours, or he's got one more balcony on his palace, or one more floor, or, you know. Yayati answered, "This Ushinara's son has given all he possessed for attaining to the region of Brahman. Therefore, he is the foremost among us. Besides Shivi's liberality, asceticism, truth, virtue, modesty, forgiveness, amiability, desire performing good acts have been so great that none can measure them." Vaishampayana continued, right, because the others were there, but his were that of Brahman. So ascetics, the austerities that he gave were greater. You know? The other kings gave attainment to heaven. He gave also attainment to Brahman. Does that make sense? Vaishampayana can...
It sees that all these personalities, they were like highly educated in the Shastras. So why were they so much interested in going to heaven rather than going back to Godhead?
If they're so knowledgeable, why would they want to go to heaven rather than going back to Godhead? It's by association only that you learn about going back to Godhead. You understand? So many people may know so many things, but unfortunately then they may not understand the transcendental position of service to the Lord. Does that make sense? So they've learned so many things, they know so many things, they're very great personalities. That's why it said someone who's a devotee, they're the best. Because that's the final conclusion. Even if, just by whatever the situation, they may not appear to be manifesting all the great qualities, still they're way better than anybody else. Right? Because the other person, in the material sense, they may be very qualified. But the transcendental sense, they may not be. Well, the devotee then is transcendentally the best situated because he's going back to Godhead. Right? So that's the best. It means one who is takes up the proper activities becomes human. Then amongst those, only a few desire to know what's beyond that. Of those, only a few know. Of those, only a few endeavor to go to out of the material world. Right? And of those who get out of, and of that, a very few get it. And of those who get that, very few are interested in God consciousness. Right? So it's the natural development. Yeah?
Also because the enjoyment and the heavenly planets is such, they always, when they come, they just want to go back right on.
Yeah. Like that. So you see is that the enjoyment is there, so they'll tend to move in that direction. Vaishambhaina continued, after this, Ashtaka, impelled by curiosity, again asked his maternal grandfather, resembling Indra himself, saying, O king, I ask thee, tell me truly, whence thou art, who thou art, and whose son? Is there any other Brahman or Kshatriya who hath done what thou didst on earth? Yayati answered, I tell thee truly, I am Yayati, the son of Nahusha, and the father of Pudu. I was lord of all the earth. Ye are my relatives. I tell thee truly, I am the maternal grandfather of you all. Having conquered the whole earth, I gave clothes to Brahmins and also 100 handsome horses fit for sacrificial offering. For such acts of virtue, the gods became propitious to those that perform them. I also gave to Brahmanas this whole earth with their horses and elephants and kine, and good and gold, all kinds of wealth, along with 100 arbudas of excellent milk cows. But the earth and the firmament exist owing to my truth and virtue. Fire yet burneth in the world of men owing to my truth and virtue. Neither hath a word spoken by me been untrue. It is for this that the wise adore truth. O Astaka, all I have told thee, Pratardana, Vasumat, is truth itself. I know it for certain that the gods and the rishis and all the mansions of the blessed are adorable only because of truth that cherisheth them all. He that will without malice duly read unto good brahmanas his account of our ascension to heaven shall himself attain to the same worlds with us. Vaishampayana continued, it was thus that the illustrious King Yayati, of high achievement, rescued by his collateral descendants, ascended to heaven, leaving the earth and covering the three worlds with the fame of his deeds. Section 94. Janamejaya said, O adorable one, I desire to hear the histories of those kings who were descended from Puru. Tell me of each as he was possessed of prowess and achievements. I have indeed heard that in Puru's line there was not a single one who was wanting in good behavior and prowess, or who was without sons. O thou of ascetic wealth, I desire to hear the histories in detail of those famous monarchs, endued with learning and all accomplishments. Vaishampayana said, ask by thee, I shall tell thee all about the heroic kings in Puru's line, all equal unto Indra in prowess, possessing great affluence and commanding the respect of all for their accomplishments. Puru had by his wife Paushti three sons, Pravira, Ishwara, and Raudrashva. All of them were mighty car warriors. Among them, Pravira was the perpetrator of the dynasty. Pravira had by his wife Surasani a son named Manasyu, and the latter, of eyes like lotus petals, had a sway over the whole earth, bounded by the four seas. And Manushya, for his wife, had for his wife Sauviri, and he begot upon her three sons called Shakta, Sahana, and Vagmi, and they were heroes in battle and mighty car warriors. The intelligent and virtuous Chaudrashva begat upon the Apsara Mistrakeshi 10 sons who were all great bowmen. And they all grew up unto heroes, performing numerous sacrifices in honors of the gods. And they all had sons who were learned in all branches of knowledge and ever devoted to virtue. They are Richeyu, Kakshareyu, Vrikheyu, of great prowess, Standileyu, and Vaneyu, and Jaleyu, of great fame, Tejeyu, of great strength and intelligence, and Satyeyu, of the prowess of Indra, Dharmeyu, and Sanateyu, the 10th of the prowess of celestials. What is this, Ayu? Huh? Amongst them all, Richeyu became the sole monarch of the whole earth. It was known by the name of Anadrishti, and in prowess he was like Andu Vasavat among the celestials. And Anadrishti had a son of the name Matinara, who became a famous and virtuous king and performed the Rajasuya and horse sacrifice. And Matinara had 4 sons of immeasurable prowess, namely Tansu, Mahan, Atirata, and Drahyu, of immeasurable glory. Among them, Tansu, of great prowess, became the perpetrator of Puru's line. And he subjugated the whole earth and acquired great fame and splendor. And Tansu begat a son of great prowess named Ilina, and he became the foremost of all conquerors, and brought the whole world under his subjugation. And Ilina begat upon his wife, Ratantara, 5 sons with Dushmanta at their head, all equal in might unto the great elements. They were Dushmanta, Sura, Bhima, Pravasu, and Vasu. And O Janamejaya, the eldest of them, Dushmanta, became king. And Dushmanta had by his wife Shukuntala an intelligent son named Bharata, who became king. Right? So this goes, you can see we're jumping back and forth. So when he went back to Yayati, then that was before Dushmanta. And Bharata gave his name to the race of which he was the founder. And it is from him that the fame of that dynasty hath spread so wide. And Bharata begat upon his 3 wives 9 sons in all. But none of them were like their father, and so Bharata was not at all pleased with them. Their mothers therefore became angry and slew them all. Watch out for the Kshatriya ladies. The procreation of children by Bharata therefore became vain. The monarch then performed a great sacrifice, and through the grace of Bharadwaj obtained a son named Bhumanyu. And then Bharata, the great descendant of Puru, regarded himself as really possessing a son, installed, O foremost, one of Bharata's race, that son as his heir apparent. And Bhumanyu begat upon his wife, Pushkarini, 6 sons named Suhotra, Suhotri, Suhavi, Suheja, Divirata, and Kichika. And that Suhotra, I think this is the one that our, you know, how you say, associate was named after. He comes up, I think, in the later. He's a very prominent person. The eldest of them all, Suhotra, obtained the throne and performed many Rajasuyas and horse sacrifices. And Suhotra brought under his sway the whole earth, surrounded by her belt of seas and full of elephants, kine, and horses, and all her wealth of gems and gold. And the earth, afflicted with the weight of numberless human beings and elephants, horses, and cars, was, as it were, about to sink. and during the virtuous reign of Sahotra, the surface of the whole earth was dotted all over with hundreds and thousands of sacrificial stakes. Right? Means that they stake out the sacrifice, so then if those stakes are there, that means sacrifice has been performed. And the lord of the earth, Sahotra, begat upon his wife Aishakti three sons, naming Ajamita, Sumita, and Purumita. The eldest of them, Ajamita, was the perpetrator of the royal line, and he begat six sons. Riksha was born in the womb of Dumini, Dushmanta, and Parameshtin, of Nili and Janu. Jala and Rupina were born in that of Keshini. All the tribes of the Panchalas are descended from Dushmanta and Parameshtin. And the Kushikas are the sons of Janu, of immeasurable prowess. And Riksha, who was older than both Jala and Rupina, became king. And Riksha begat Samvarana, the perpetrator of the royal line. And, O king, it hath been heard by us that while Samvarana, the son of Riksha, was ruling the earth, there happened a great loss of people from famine, pestilence, drought, and disease. And the Bharata princes were beaten by the troops of enemies. And the Panchalas, setting out to invade the whole earth with their four kinds of troops, soon brought the whole earth under their sway. And with their 10 Akshauhinis, the king of the Panchalas defeated the Bharata prince. Samvarana then, with his wife and ministers, sons and relatives, fled in fear and took shelter in the forest on the bank of the Sindhu, extending to the foot of the mountains. There the Bharatas lived for a full 1,000 years within their fort. And after they lived there a thousand years, one day the illustrious Rishi Vasishtha approached the exiled Bharatas, who, on going out, saluted the Rishi and worshipped him by the offer of Argya. And entertaining him with reverence, they represented everything under that illustrious Rishi. And after he was seated on his seat, the king himself approached the Rishi and addressed him, saying, "Be thou our priest, O illustrious one. We will endeavor to regain our kingdom." And Vasishtha answered the Bharatas by saying, "Om," the sign of consent. It hath been heard by us that Vasishtha then installed the Bharata prince in the sovereignty of all the Kshatriyas on earth, making by virtue of his mantras this descendant of Puru the veritable horns of the wild bull, or the tusks of the wild elephants. And the king retook the capital that had been taken away from him, and once more made all monarchs pay tribute to him. The powerful Samvarana, thus installed once more in the actual sovereignty of the whole earth, performed many sacrifices, at which the presents to the Brahmanas were great. Samvarana begat upon his wife Tapati, the daughter of Surya, a son named Kuru. Right? Later on, we'll see that Chitrarata calls Arjuna by this name, by Tapati. Tapatya, because the son of Tapati. So, you know, because no one had ever heard that. Right? We've heard of, you know, son of Bharata, you know, and that he's in the line of Puru, or in the line of Yayati, or like this. We've heard so many of these, but we had never heard Tapatya, right? That's because then, in here, is that Samvarana, he married the daughter of the sun god, Tapati. A son named Kuru, right? So they're the son of them, Samvarana and Tapati, was Kuru, right? So they're known as the Kuru dynasty. Right? So the Bharata dynasty is there, and then this is then specifically after that, it's called the Kuru dynasty.
Thousands of years goes by.
Yeah, thousands of years.
Yeah. For the modern historians, is like,
yeah.
They cannot go that far.
No.
Maximum to the Egyptians and Bath.
Yeah. That's it. Even the Egyptians, because so many, I think, just so many findings, they've had to kind of start to accept the Egyptians' account that their dynasty goes back 20,000 years. even though they always tried to stuff them into 5,000 years in the modern history. Yeah, but now they've kind of are starting to look that it's not a bad thing to accept the 20,000 like that, you know.
Especially because
it
was popular,
and
each king was living for 1,000 years.
Yeah. Yeah, so it would last a while. This Kuru was exceedingly virtuous, and therefore he was installed on the throne by his people. It is after his name that the field called Kuru Jungla has become so famous in this world. Devoted to asceticism, he made that field, Kurukshetra, sacred by practicing asceticism there. And it has been heard by us that Kuru's highly intelligent wife, Vahini, brought forth 5 sons, namely Abhishit, Pravishanta, Chaitrarata, Muni, and the celebrated Janamejaya. Right? Also notice here it said, highly intelligent wife, right? So Prabhupada mentions highly intelligent means a combination of great scholastic learning and very high character, right? Does that make sense? So that's why it would be noted. Is that, you know, it's like you say, let's say the virtuous wife or very religious wife, right? But here it said highly learned, so it didn't say virtuous because virtuous is already included in highly learned. Right, so that means all the queens before, they were all very virtuous, but this one happened to be very intelligent as well. Right, you know the scriptures and that to a high degree. So that combination of being virtuous and knowledgeable is called highly learned. Right, otherwise you're learned or you're virtuous, but when you combine the two, it's called highly learned. Right, because before we said knowledge is more than the other qualities. Yeah. Right. So therefore, it's called, instead of saying very virtuous, because that means doesn't necessarily mean very academic, but here highly learned means that it's that plus the character. Does that make sense? Can, knowledgeable should.
It's only to the heavenly planets.
Yeah, but they may know a lot of the metaphysics of the material world. Or they may know, let's say, very depth Sanskrit or Jyotish, or they may know the rituals or the Dharma Shastra or Nyaya. Just like there's a book called what's that one? It's on omens. Huh? Not Shakuna. That's the general thing. It's a Bengali one. Yeah, Karnarvachan. Karnarvachan, she was a princess that was very well knowledgeable in the astrological science. So for the benefit of the common people, she put all the astrological things of the omens into a very simple verse that they can understand. Like that. And so then that's quoted. Like when we see the thing of when you go out and you see a full bucket and all these, that's coming from her. Like that. So she would be an example of someone who's highly learned, you know. But it's, they may be a devotee not, or let's say Chanakya was known to be very intelligent, but he wasn't necessarily a devotee like that. So you can be very knowledgeable in the Vedic arts and sciences, but not and philosophies, but not necessarily be a devotee. It's unfortunate, but it can happen. But best is that they're also devoted.
That's why Krishna said, out of thousands, one becomes liberated, and out of millions, hardly one knows the truth.
Yeah.
Generally, you see the dance groups who are actually highly learned and educated like that, they do worship Vishnu. They might not view it as like others.
Yeah, that's true.
But they do worship Vishnu. They don't worship Vishnu. They cannot get that result. And Chanakya posts many times that the best thing is to worship Vishnu. If you have best if somebody is learned and devotee. But if he is not devotee, then it's no use.
Yeah, because if you're very learned, you'll know that worship of Vishnu is the top.
So the element is there, but it's not the emphasis. Not that that is the main thing was worshiping deity and
Yeah. Well, it's like Jarasandha used to worship Shaligram. Because it's, of all the worship, it's the most important. So then they're intelligent, they know that, but it's not necessarily that they're devoted. That's another point. That's a different...
Almost the beginning of every Rupa Veda is worship Vishnu first, Jodh Vishnu, Veda. That they don't necessarily comprehend how far he goes.
Yeah. And Abhishit begat Parikshit, the powerful, Savalasva, Adhiraja, Viraja, Salmali of great physical strength, Uchai Shravas, Mangakara, and Jitari, the eighth. That's why they always ask, what's your name and your father's name? Because we see here, here's Parikit. Yeah. No, Parikit, son of Avishit, who is son of Kuru. Like that. Or Janamejaya here, who is son of Abhishit, right? So then you know, because then you know Janamejaya, he was the son of Parikit, you know, so then it's, that's why it's, they always ask who the father's name is. You know, it's just like you get together a bunch of, you know, kids in the movement, right? You know, and in the crowd, you know, how many of them are named Krishna Das? So Krishna Das, you know, who's your father, you know? Because otherwise you don't know.
Who's your father, Krishna Das?
Yeah, yeah. Krishna Das Senior. Krishna Das Junior. Krishna Das Junior the Third. Okay. In the race of these were born as the fruit of their pious acts, seven great mighty car warriors with Janamejaya at their head. And under Parikit were born sons who were all acquainted with the secrets of religion and profit. They were namely Kakshasena and Ugrasena, Chitrasena, endued with great energy, and Indrasena, and Shushena, and Bhimasena. And the sons of Janamejaya were all endued with great strength and had become celebrated all over the world. And they were Dhritarashtra, who was the eldest. Now we're getting pretty close here. And Pandu, and Vahlika, and Nishadha, endued with great energy. And then the mighty Jamvunda, and Kundodhara, and Parati, and then Vasati, the eighth. They were all proficient in morality and profit, and were all kind to all creatures. Among them, Dhritarashtra became king. And Dhritarashtra had eight sons, namely Kundika. No, so this is a whole different group. Kundika, Hasti, Vitaraka, Krata, the fifth, Havi Shravas, Indrabha, and Bhomanyu, the invincible. And Dhritarashtra had many grandsons, of whom three only were famous. They were, O king, Pratipa, Dharma Manetra, Sunetra. Among these three, Pratipa became unrivaled on earth. And O bull in Bharata's race, Pratipa begot three sons, namely Devapi, Santanu, and the mighty car warrior Vahlika. We might be getting close now. Because Vahlika, he's mentioned in when it says on the battlefield, grandfathers, so then he was there also, because Shantanu was gone, but he was there. Okay. Oh, one sentence. O monarch, besides, there were born in the race of Bharatas numberless other excellent monarchs, endued with great energy and like unto the celestial rishis themselves in virtue and ascetic power. And so also in the race of Manu were born many mighty car warriors, like unto the celestials themselves, who by their number swelled the Isla dynasty into gigantic proportions. So, end there.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
That Puru and Yadu could be brothers, because Yadu just says that if he descends from the lunar dynasty, doesn't he? And then Arjuna.
They become the lunar dynasty. They become the lunar dynasty, and that they're subservient to the sun dynasty. So how that works, I don't know. Maybe that'll come up at some time. But that's why they're certain, because Puru became the king. So Yadu became the subservient. Yeah.
That's beautiful. You mentioned that we are knowledge is based on the principles. And this is the source of all principles. So if a person is very learned, but he's not a devotee, is his knowledge actually real knowledge?
Technically, no. It's a knowledge, we respect it, and they can do so many practical things, or know so many things, technical things, but it's not called real knowledge. No. You know? It's not called real knowledge.
You make it names and times and all. Scary.
Yeah. Problem
can get stuck here.
Yeah. It just goes on and on.
How can these wonderful personalities, they were somehow or other desired to just keep going in the samsara?
Because it doesn't mean that you can't be nice. You know, they're nice people.
So they keep going up. Yeah. Even if they come to earth, they are born and great.
Yeah, yeah. Systems. Yeah, well, just everybody moves around, keeps going around and around.
Some of them are Vishnu's servants also through their own creation. Like some of these demigods, they stay the whole way until another day of Brahma ends.
Some, but generally that's all above Indra. Everyone from Indra are in that realm. It's always, they change 14 times in a day. So you have to be above. The Maharjana, Tapa, and Satya, they'll stay for a day or many days.
They have greater knowledge about.
Yeah, but the thing is their knowledge is for a different purpose. So that's why it's said that Krishna consciousness is the real piety, and the other piety are not necessarily the real piety.
We're so lucky they all, Mahaprabhu, with all his sekita, with all his devotees, actually hold.